Hey everybody, Elon here. A little bonus episode for you in the Keeping Carlson podcast feed. Sorry for the bad audio quality. I'm recording this from my bedroom. I just got an episode of the KK Leagues report that Derek Dodgson recorded interviewing Jordan, one of our longtime tier one competitors and Uber trader, and they did a whole episode all about trading. If you don't know what the KK Leagues report is, that's probably because you're not a patron of Keeping Carlson, which is totally fine. It's been a series of episodes talking about the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League and our other Dynasty League, and it's been an exclusive just for the patrons. But we figured since Brian and I aren't recording a mega show this weekend, since there's not that much to talk about since the last one, aside from that Shea Theodore injury, how frustrating is that? But whatever. Okay. We figured might as well drop this in. I actually haven't listened yet, but I'm super excited for it because Jordan is one of the most prolific traders I've ever seen. And I'm really excited to hear the thought process that goes into all of his moves. And Derek is a great interviewer. So enjoy the KK Leagues report. I guess this is the KK Trades report, I think he called it. Yeah, and then I'm going to be recording a matchup maximizer soon, so that'll go in. And then if you're a patron, Brian and I will be recording a patron cast on Tuesday night. We'd love to have you joining us. And if you're not a patron, check out keepingcarlson.com/patron to get access to join that live show where Brian and I answer every question sent in by the patrons. So yeah, enjoy this show by Derek and Jordan, and I'll be back with that matchup maximizer soon. Have a great weekend. Bye.
Welcome, everyone, to a special episode of what we're calling the KK Trade Report. I am your host, Derek Dodgson, and with me today is of Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League Tier 1 Sweden fame, Jordan. Jordan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about one of my favorite aspects of the Kakupful and fantasy hockey as a whole, which is trading.
Trading, something that some people can't get into, some people like yourself love. Let's see if we can break it down and help promote it a little bit more going forward. So why don't we start off by talking a little bit about your history in Kakupful and with fantasy hockey in general. I know you've been in Tier 1 for a long time, but I guess how did you start in fantasy hockey and getting following the podcast?
This is going to sound like a brag, but it's not really. When you're in Tier 1 for so long, it kind of all blurs together. I think this is my fifth year straight in Tier 1. And then So I started in the Kakupful, and then I won my division. And then I went to Tier 2 because there's less tiers back then. And then I went straight from Tier 2 that year into Tier 1. So it's kind of been a blur since then. But before the Kakupful, I had only really done a few leagues with a few friends, a few random online leagues, but nothing too serious. And I was doing pretty good in my home league, so I stepped in the Kakupful, wanted a little taste of a higher competition, you could say, and I've been happy with the results ever since. Easily the best league in the world, as I've said many times before. I'll stand by that. So,
did the previous leagues you were in, were they generally points-based as well, or did you dabble in any other?
I started with Cats and then slowly transitioned to points, and then Kakupful was points when I the first year I was here, it was still points. I just prefer points over Cats. I used to be Cats. I don't know. Points is just more fun to me, and I feel like fantasy hockey should be about fun, and you can get an edge in Cats if you're an Excel master, but it's less fun in my opinion. So, but don't yell at me for that. I know people like Cats.
No, it's all right. I think as we'll talk about later, there's, different dynamics to trading in categories leagues as well. And I still play in a few of those. So I get a little bit of all the flavors in terms of different formats for leagues. But so you have a reputation as being someone who is really good at pulling off trades. And I'd like to hear some of your advice for the listeners on how to make that happen and how to make trades work for you.
Yeah. So I feel like I could talk for like 5 hours on trading and all the little different aspects and the little nuances it's a big topic, and I put a lot of time into it. Just an example, just to set the scene a little bit. Not as much this year, but especially in my first few years of Tier 1, like I would go to bed every night and I would at least look over the rosters of every single person in Tier 1. And I would kind of see like, oh, is something possible here? Maybe not send a trade, maybe not even think about it more than that. But like every day I was looking, is there a possibility here? Is there a possibility there? And it definitely takes lots of effort, but I think you can get rewarded both in the standings of your league and rewarded just for having, you know, a good time. Because I think, while I'll start off by saying, I think trading gets a little bit of a harsh rap because you make a trade, it's a bad trade, you feel bad for the rest of the year, you say you're never going to trade again. Like, I understand that. I've made, not every trade I make is a good trade, but I think trading at its core can be a lot of fun. And I mean, fantasy hockey is supposed to be about fun at the end of the day. I know it's hard in Tier 1 or Tier 2 or Tier 3 or any of the tiers, like a couple is hard, but you got to remind yourself sometimes that it's supposed to be about fun. So having a new major player on your roster, to me anyway, it's a lot of fun. And I think people sometimes miss that when they're playing fantasy hockey. I know it can be mixed emotions depending on how they do or how they progress throughout the year. But I think trying to figure out exactly what a player is going to do in the future you got to just be easier on yourself, if anything. Try to have fun with it and don't think too much when your trade doesn't go your way.
Definitely some good sanity advice.
Yes.
You know, I think we like to, there's a lot of false confidence among people who, you know, put a lot of effort into their off-season prep or their draft prep or reliance on spreadsheets of projections from various sources. You know, people can think they have a lot of certainty over what the future is going to hold for a certain player, but it really isn't. You know, they are ultimately all just guesses, and, you know, you can make the best guesses, but they're not going to be, you know, for sure the right move to make. And when you look back on it, you know, weeks and months later, one interesting point, I think, you know, you talked about the fun aspect of having a new player on your roster. I was also thinking about, you know, the useful sort of strategic aspect, which is if my roster in one league or across multiple leagues is pretty static, I tend to only keep checking those same teams, you know, for news of the players that I have. And I kind of end up with blind spots on teams that I don't have players from. For example, I think this year, I think I'm totally lacking players on Tampa Bay, and I have not at all been following, you know, what Kucherov and Gensel and Hagel have been up to, and like the other players that have been bouncing in and out of lines with them. And, you know, you miss out on some opportunities and potentially picking up new players and streamers because you're not following certain teams, and trading is certainly a way that you can keep, you know, forcing yourself or compelling yourself to follow more teams too.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point, because I obviously probably take it too far. Like I said, for bed, looking over every team in the league, going through every player, I probably do too much maybe, but the more you put into trading and trying to find the trades, you kind of force yourself to evaluate every player on every team to some extent anyway, trying to get a rough estimation on how you value them versus your player. So it kind of keeps you engaged, like you said, on teams maybe you weren't have an eye on, depending on which players you have in which of your leagues. And just to quickly highlight on the fun thing, one thing I missed was fantasy hockey. Usually at the start of the year, it's like, oh, there's a draft. I'm having a really good time. I'm excited for the draft, my draft prep. It's kind of like the big bonanza Christmas of the fantasy hockey year is at the start of the year. And then it slowly kind of dissipates throughout the year. You get into the January, it's kind of like gray. It depends how you're doing in the standings. The interest kind of drops off. But I think trading can really help with that, because like when you're making a trade, you're adding an entire new piece to your roster. And I don't know for anyone else, but for me, when you like wake up that morning when the trade processes it and you see this new big piece on your roster, you get a little bit of that like draft excitement in the form of the trade, because you see this new guy on your roster and he's going to play a game today. And that's kind of exciting. At least it is to me. So, and then you're looking at the score and you're like, oh, I wonder how he's doing. And I don't know. I think that's fun. You get a little bit of mid drafts in the middle of the season, especially I've made like, I think my, how many, highest amount of trades I've ever made, like 15. So maybe more, but that's 15 times during the year. I get a little excitement from a trade on my phone, and fantasy hockey is supposed to be fun. So, yeah,
All right. What's your number one piece of advice for someone who's trying to, you know, thinks they need to make a trade? They're trying to look, you know, at other rosters. They're trying to come up with a proposal. What's your best advice for someone in that position?
I think my best advice, and it's going to sound easier said than done, but my best advice for you, anyone potentially trying to look for any trade in fantasy hockey, is just put yourself in the other person's shoes. Really, really, really try to put your ego aside. I know it's not easy when it comes to fantasy hockey. Sometimes it's ego. Put your ego aside. Really put your head into their head and see their roster, roster construction, like schedule coming, what's their place in the standings. Like, if you received the trade that you're sending, how would you look at it? And I think if the answer is anywhere close to no, even close to no, it's not even worth sending the trade. And then as you go from like, maybe I would look at it, but would I love it? I think anywhere in that region, it's not even worth sending the trade. And then as you get higher and higher and higher, you can kind of gauge. It's kind of weird. It's like a reverse thing, but that's always worked really well for me. If I receive this trade, would I at least think about it? And I think if you say yes to yourself in their position, then no one's really going to be that disappointed because, it's not always easy. Like I said, ego plays a big part in it. You might think the trade's good, but they might think the trade's horrible. But as long as you're trying to find the middle ground, trying to gauge what the response is going to be, you're setting yourself up for success most of the time.
It's interesting you use the word ego, and I think it's related to what I would perceive as oftentimes when we look at our own players, we see the upside. We see what we invested in them in draft capital, or we see what the best possibility is, or their best 2-week stretch earlier in the season as, you know, who they are. And when we look at players on another team's roster who we're potentially trading for, oftentimes we see the downside. We see the risk. We see, maybe they're only going to be a second line player. Maybe they're going to lose power play one, you know? So I think forcing yourself to try to evaluate your own players the same way you're evaluating your, you know, another team's players is, I think, a big thing for me, because it's so easy just because you're so much more familiar with your own players. You end up just loving them and as a result, generally valuing them more than other teams do. And in fact, for any player you drafted, you know, by definition, you valued that player more than any other team did.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another great point. I can't even fault people really, because you're looking at your team every day. You're looking at the stats, at least be like advanced stats, like quite often. You're kind of gauging how your players are doing. So you're really hooked into what your team is doing, but you're not always hooked into what your opponent's team is doing. So when it comes to a trade, you know everything about your player. You know, well, depend, like I said, I'm not judging anyone or how much effort level you put in. It's supposed to be fun. I totally understand there's different people, different strokes, all that. That's all good. But you know your players, and you might not know your opponent's players. And trying to put yourself with as much information about your opponent's team at your hand when you're doing the trade is really important. That's a good point. I guess it's, like I said, it's not always easy, but as long as you, it's, you kind of like got to gauge, it's, trading is a lot of as much like a personal thing as it is a fantasy hockey thing, because everyone's different and everyone has a different opinion on all kinds of subjects. Everyone has a different temperament. You kind of, it's a people person thing too, because a lot of trading in the couple is you send a Discord message to someone, you get a response, you kind of gauge how interested they are in the trade, how involved they are. You send an offer over, how the response is. You kind of just got to feel someone out. You don't want to force anything. You don't want to necessarily, like I said, it's supposed to be fun again. I've been in situations where I understand someone doesn't want to trade and I just got to leave it at that. As much as like, oh man, this would be such a good trade for both of us. Like here, I could lay it all out for you. Like this is why it'd be good for you. This is why it'd be good for me. This is how it could all work out. If they don't want to do the trade, at the end of the day, you just have to accept that. And sometimes it can be hard to accept, but that's just how fantasy hockey is. And maybe some of those people listen to this and be inspired to do one or two more trades, but sometimes you just got to accept things as they are.
So I, in prep for this show, I tried to come up with different categories of trades or you know, situations that might make a trade viable. And I was going to ask you for your thoughts on some of them. So I have at least four, I think, that are valid in pretty much any fantasy hockey league, and then a few other ones that are maybe focused in leagues other than Kickuffle. But starting off, I'd like to, you know, put to you the category of buy low, sell high. So what are your thoughts on that kind of trade? You know, a trade where, you know, the premise is, you know, yes, one player might have been drafted much higher than the other player, but based on recent, you know, performance, you know, the higher drafted player is, you know, slumping and the, you know, lower drafted player is on a hot streak, that kind of thing.
I'm a little slightly, just to preface, I'm a slightly biased because I am a huge, massive buy low guy, for better or worse, sometimes for worse, not always for better. I have almost never been a buy high in any circumstance. I know it can be good sometimes, but I'm almost always a buy low. With that being said, I think just one tip for the buy high, sell low that I think is really important, and it kind of leads into a different point I was going to talk about, is recency bias in trading for fantasy hockey is massive, like bigger than maybe people even realize. Because when you receive a trade offer in Yahoo, the first thing you do is just click on the player, maybe see like their fantasy points, different points league for the entire year. But mostly you're going to click them and see what they did in the past 10 games. And you're going to look and you're going to see how many points did they have, shots, time on ice, like what's going on. Maybe you go a little in depth, go into frozen tools, check the lines. But in general, you're going to look at that little game log and you're going to be like, wow, this trade's terrible. This person's so like you might not even just based on looking at those logs, it might be an auto reject without going any deeper. So I think when it comes to hot and cold, the key, this is my one piece of advice, would be you want to execute your buy high, sell low trades before like the start of a trend becomes the full trend. So if someone's blazing hot and has been blazing hot for 7 games and they have 14 points in 7 games, multi-goals, shots, the whole bang, like you're going to have to pay a massive premium to get this person. Even if you really, really want them, it's almost never going to be worth it. So in that case, I would say, this is going to sound weird, but from my experience, I actually think this works more often than it doesn't. Wait for this hot, hot player, just like 3 games, like 3-game sample size of like 1 assist or 3 games, no points. Like that's the premium. That's when you send the buy high offer. And even though you're paying, that's premium still, maybe you're not paying the premium, because if you have a hot player and they have a little bit short stretch of being really cold, that can really like mess with some people. Like as an example, I'll just light myself up here. I had Mittelstadt for the start of the year, insanely hot, crazy hot. He carried my team. Well, he didn't carry my team. He helped carry my team for multiple weeks. But then, of course, slowed it down. And by the time I'm like, maybe I should actually decide to move him, it was way, way, way too late. It's one of the cases where I really regretted holding on to him. But I kind of told myself, it is what it is this time. I'm not going to trade him. But you have to get ahead of the trend if you think you know what the trend is. Sometimes you can't predict successfully what the trend's going to be. But if you have a feeling, you got to try to execute the trades before the trend happens. So when the hot player has a little cold stretch, maybe that's the time to happen. Or the hot player that has the advanced stats, they've had 2 really good games. They might keep going. You got to hop in when those 2 games happen, not when the 3, 4, 5 game happens, because by that time, it's way too late. Or as an example for the cold player, they've been cold for like, I think as a good example, I haven't looked at the stats recently, like Dylan Strome was cold for like pointless for 8 games, 7 games, 6 games, some crazy stretch of games seems pointless. But his advanced stats were still like pretty decent, still getting the deployment, still pretty decent. You got to hit right there. You can't even wait for 1 good game from him. You got to just hope that your advanced stats and your own intuition is telling you what's going to be good. Because if you wait too long, even 1 game, that might just be enough for the person to say, I'll just hold him. He maybe he's back. Maybe that 1 game's enough, you know? So it's really about finding what's going to happen before it happens, which sounds, I know that's not easy to do, but you need a small sample size and trust your gut and trust your the information you have at hand and really just go with it. And yeah, that's the best. Sorry if I'm rambling a little bit, you know, trading really gets me fired up here. Got a lot of information to share.
It's interesting how much value or importance we can assign to those most recent 3, 4, 5 games, even in the context of an 82 game season. you know, halfway through a season when there's been, you know, 30 or 40 games played already, you know, those last few games really do seem important. And you, I think you're absolutely right. If you, you know, try to buy a player who's, you know, got a few points in their last couple of games, you know, it's going to be hard. People like looking at that sheet and seeing, you know, 1-1 or, you know, 2-1 or 1-2, you know, goals and assists. They really like seeing that and are going to be, it's going to be hard to pry a player like that away from them for sure.
Yeah. I think that's just not even buy high, sell low. I think just being cognizant of the game log when you're sending a trade to someone, just the recency bias, it's so real for trading. I'll swear by it, because that's really, especially if someone's not necessarily super dialed into that week for fantasy hockey, they'll just look at the recent list and then that'll be the start point for the trade. So really trying to time your trades, especially buy high, sell lows, based on the most recent sample size is really important in my opinion. And then one quick other thing I'll say about the buy high, sell low. It's almost like the idea for, like, that's just one thing any fantasy hockey person will say for trading is buy high, sell low, or buy low, sell high, sorry, buy low, sell high, whatever version you want. But it's almost like you don't want to do it just because you can every time. I try to be like, if you have a player that's cold, you don't have to trade them. I know that sounds like simple, but like you just don't have to. You can trust your instinct, trust your gut, check the advanced stats, and you don't have to get rid of them. Even if you're slipping in the standings, you're getting a little nervous, I think sticking with your gut instead of doing the thing that maybe other people suggest can serve you better, especially depending on your confidence level for trading. I think you don't always have to force something just because you think that's the right thing to do. I think you should really just maybe slow it down, look at your team, look at what's going on before you make any big decisions. You know, it's easy to say like, oh, wow, let's do this big trade. But sometimes that's not really what you need, even though you might think so.
This NHL season has been as predictable as a puck rolling on its edge. No one knows where it's going. But that just means there's time for your favorite team to figure things out and games left for you to get in on the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. It's super easy for first-timers to get started. Try betting on something simple like picking a team to win. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, select your team, and place your first bet. And if you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN, stands for the Hockey Podcast Network, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/ice.
Well, in terms of patience, that kind of relates to the next category of trade I'll introduce for discussion here, and that's the concept of within a season, you know, trading for a hot player now or trading away an injured player now, in the sense that it's like, you know, you might help someone who needs to climb the standings to get back into the playoff picture. Meanwhile, you're getting a player who might be injured now or might have a bad schedule now, but has a really good playoff schedule, can really help you in the playoffs. So, you know, I like to think of, you know, players that are cold now, you know, are they a player that I'm going to want on my roster in the playoffs? You know, and if the answer is yes, then I'm definitely going to be more inclined to be patient with them and keeping them. But at the same time, I think there's opportunities for, you know, you to say, you know, you have a really hot player now, their playoff schedule is really bad. Maybe now that's a player you try and sell, you know, in exchange for someone else.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
We had, you know, some star players get injured recently And I'll spoil and jump ahead a little bit. We were going to talk about a couple specific trades that were made in the Kecupful this year. And one of them made just a week ago by Elon, as discussed on the recent show, is that he traded his Alex Barkov away for an injured Kirill Kaprizov. What do you think about that trade and the risk, but also potential reward that it might have with Kaprizov's very good Minnesota playoff schedule if he's healthy by then?
Yeah, so I might go a little against the grain here, but I like really, really like that for Elon. And the main reason I say that is the Kecupful is structured in such a way that you have a big reward for coming in first and second. So it depends on your tier. It's mainly like really big reward for coming in first. So I think playoff performance, you can't... I've been in playoffs every year in tier one. I can't get to the final. I can't win. But I think playoff performance... setting yourself up the best possible way you can to do well in the playoffs is a big thing. So I think Elon's like, obviously that's a good trade in my opinion, because he's gaining playoff schedule. But I think my advice, actually just as a general advice based on this trade, is if you think you have a decent, not even like decent, like over 50% chance of making the playoffs, maybe even like less than that, I don't think these are the type of trades that you really should do. I think these are the type of trades you should only do if you're really, really desperate. You think there's no, like, extremely low chance you're going to make the playoffs. You're doing a Hail Mary kind of deal. I think at that point it makes sense. But I think in most cases, it's better to sneak into the playoffs with the good playoff schedule than it is to, like, do the trade that gets you the playoffs, but then in the playoffs, your opponent has a good playoff schedule and you just get crushed anyways, you know? So I think in a league like the Kecupful specifically, I would only do these kind of trades if I'm really, really out of it. So based on that, like I said, I'm not sure on the standings of the Barkov receiver, but I like it for Elon just based on that. And he's tier three, I think, right? So he wants to get first to get back to tier one. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I generally agree with, you know, trying to get the good playoff schedule. And I've been hunting those players, you know, for most of the year myself, you know, not taking for granted that I'll make playoffs, but, you know, hoping and working toward it. I think it in the Kecupful with our promotion and relegation scheme, there is something to be said, just limping into the playoffs, you know, will at least get you better off than if you're in the consolation bracket. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no way that, you know, finishing out of the playoffs, but then winning the consolation playoffs can get you promoted higher than if you just, you know, went in sixth place, got in the playoffs and lost in the first round. So I think that, you know, there's probably cause for trades like this, for the Barkov receiver to get, you know, another four matchups worth of, you know, productive player. And I think in Kaprizov's case, it's not a guarantee he's going to be back in time. You know, yeah. I think the optimist, you know, hopes he is, but it's not a guaranteed slam dunk. It's definitely a risky trade, I think.
Yeah. Maybe, I think specifically, sorry to cut you off. I would just highlight that. Yeah. I think in this case, just because Kaprizov, even if he comes back like on time and everything's perfect, like he might not be himself right away, because that's how injuries work. So I think in that case, it's a little risky. But I still think even then, I mean, it's all about risk tolerance, right? I think even then I like it, but I definitely see where you're coming from.
I think if this same, you know, injury had happened maybe a month earlier in the season, I think I'd be all over it. I think the closer it gets to playoffs, the more apprehensive I become. And I'm honestly not sure. I think I probably would have still done the trade and you know, traded away Barkov to get Kaprizov, but it definitely is, you know, like we were saying earlier, nothing is a certainty. You're always, you know, trying to make little bets and hopefully little improvements or, you know, modest chances of improvement in each move. And in the aggregate, hope they work out for you.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I'm not sure the Barkov owners, I should have looked it up, like what their standing is. But I think in general for those kind of trades, like I said, for the Kecupful specifically, but I think you can do trades that are playoff based where both people are happy, and there doesn't have to be a winner. I know a lot for trading, it comes with like, I need to win the trade for the trade to be worth it, but you can truly have trades that both teams win. I've made playoffs. It's a little different in tier one because if you make the playoffs, you stay in tier one. So I've made trades in previous years where I'm on the cusp of playoffs and it's a little iffy, where I traded away a bad playoff schedule. I think I actually did that specifically to Elon. I traded away some Lightning player who had a good playoff schedule to get a better pre-playoff schedule. And that ended up working out for me. I made the playoffs and I lost in the playoffs, but at least I made it, you know. It's a little bit different in tier one. But yeah, I don't think it necessarily has to be a winner and loser. That was just kind of my cupful overarching thought, just because there's so much emphasis on winning and so much of a bonus if you win your the league instead of just finishing like third or fourth.
So I did just look up just for, so we can close the loop on this one. And it looks like the team that traded away Kaprizov to get Barkov in this case is currently 12th out of 14.
Okay.
They're a 6-12 record. It looks, how many matchups do we have left? Yeah, only three right? matchups left. So yeah. I don't think they can make the, you know, championship playoffs.
Yeah, but maybe they're just fighting for, I don't know if the cutoff is in tier two, fighting to stay.
Yeah.
Which still makes sense, right?
I'm sure they, you know, the way the consolation bracket works for Kakupful is your teams 7-12 will get into that. And then teams 13-14, you know, will stay 13th and 14th ranked. So, you know, it could be the kind of trade that helps them, you know, make sure ideally they don't end up 13th, 14th, and then they can, you know, maybe have a more reliable, you know, player in the first round of the playoffs, you know, in the consolation. So yeah, I think it definitely can work out for them. And the interesting thing with, you know, Kakupful, you have the counter offer mechanics. So I'm sure there were other teams that considered making an offer or maybe did. But ultimately, I guess they decided Barkov was the best one available.
Yeah. And just one more highlight before maybe move on for the Kaprizov specifically is like the Minnesota schedule for, I think it's the semifinal week, is really, really, really good. Like not just good. I think it's like, it's the Streamagami or whatever, where it's all the off weeks. Like, so it's not just a good playoff schedule. It's the good playoff schedule. So I totally understand Elon taking the swing.
There was a point early in the season where Marco Rossi was a free agent in my division, and I was so close to picking him up. He was cold and, like, you know, it was not a good schedule for Minnesota at the time. And I was just, you know, I knew, I had that feeling like if I don't grab him now, someone else will, you know, he'll end up being good enough to hold and I'll never get him back. And I felt bad, but I ultimately didn't take him. And alas, of course, someone else grabbed him. He got really hot and now he's going to be someone else's playoff champion, unfortunately, instead of mine.
The small decisions during the season, you know, some other alternate universe, he was terrible and he's on line three right now. You know, you never know.
So let's talk about another category of trade. And it's one that I personally stray away from because I generally think it is less likely to work in a league like Kakupful where everyone's taking things really seriously and really value conscious. And that's a 2-for-1, or, you know, you can extend that to a 3-for-1 deal where, you know, maybe one side is getting the best player and then another side is getting two really good players or something like that. You know, are there situations where you think that can work? You know, what, when, or when you're looking through rosters of other teams in your division, do you consider something like that?
So it's a little bit harder for me because in tier one, they're on it. So I've pulled off a few 2-for-1s or 3-for-2 trades in tier one before, but in general, in the Kakupful, from my experience, you're never really doing like a true 2-for-1 trade. Maybe I've done like one or two or three of true 2-for-1s over my time in Kakupful. You're mostly doing like a 1-for-1 with like a throw in kind of guy. So it is technically a 2-for-1, but maybe the 2-for-1 is upgrading your player like 5% or something. These are some of my favorite trades, by the way, is like a 2-for-1 where you're having like a throw in guy, maybe he's hot. Maybe he has a schedule for your opponent next week. It's one of my favorite things to do. So I'll just highlight it now, is like, if you have two players that are similar, but you like one more, and especially easier if they have the similar position eligibility, adding something that your opponent would want, like I said, maybe they're in a tight matchup and you're either lost or won your week. Just be like, hey, this guy has a good matchup at the end of the week. Would you be interested in him? And they would say, oh yeah, for sure. It's like, hey, how about something like this? And then offer like a 2-for-1 where the two main players are very similar, but maybe you're getting a small upgrade. Maybe they don't even think it's a small upgrade. As long as you think it's a small upgrade, you're using the equity of the players you have that you're probably going to drop anyway to upgrade yourself into a better position. And you can do that with 3-for-2, 2-for-1s. And you can do that like all the time. It doesn't always work out right, but there's literally nothing wrong with... maybe this is sometimes burns me, but like I've never attached to free agents that I add within like 2 weeks, even if they're blazing hot. Like you could get a blazing hot ad that I had 3 days ago or 4 days ago, who's prime deployment. Like he could take off. He could be hold for the rest of the year. You can get that player away from me very easily because I want to consolidate that value into something that I know is going to hold for the rest of the year, regardless. So I think when it comes to 3-for-2 or 2-for-1s, trying to make them not as big and flashy and major pieces, especially in the cupful, is a road to success because people are just too smart. It's going to be, I know maybe a trade we'll talk about later. It kind of worked out-ish for someone, but it in general, it's pretty hard. And the really only time I think in a serious league like this that it works is when it like the stars like align, like someone really needs to shake up the roster. You have the perfect 2-for-1 or 3-for-2 setup. It makes so much perfect sense. And like that can happen. And I've done some of those, but it takes so much effort. It takes a lot of things lining up for it to really work out. So I don't necessarily think you should be looking for those unless you see something really clearly that makes sense for both of you.
I think you kind of mentioned, you know, you're really only going to be able to get a slight upgrade. You're not trading 2-for-1, you know, in the sense of like 2-4 kickoffle point per game players to get a 7 or an 8 point per game kickoffle player. You're never getting that. What maybe you're doing is you're trading, you know, your 4.5 point per game player or 5 point per game player for another 5 point per game player. But in order to do that, you've got to, you know, have that hot free agent you picked up who in the last, you know, week or two has been putting up 5 points a game as well. You got to trade like 2 of those players to get one who's only ever so slightly better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's probably my favorite. Those are my favorite kind of trades to do. Like I said before, I think we were going to talk about it maybe later, but I'll talk about it now. I'm a big advocate for if you think a player is better than another player, even if it's just slightly better, slightly 1-2% better, I think you should do the trade. I know emotionally that can be tough because you do a trade where you think someone's 2% better and then the person you trade away absolutely pops off. And you're like, well, that was dumb of me. Like, I only thought this guy was slightly better. Now the other guy's going crazy. But I think if your decision-making process at the time, you're confident in it and you see the value in doing the trade, you should do it regardless of the result later on. Because a 2% value over time, doing multiple trades over and over again throughout the years, that's going to give you results in the long run, as long as your decision-making process at the time is correct. So another thing that I was going to bring up later is like the decision-making process of a trade is more important than the results. It's not easy to say that, but that's really the key for trading. That's like another big key for me is try not to be results oriented. Really, 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 really try to just hone in on what was my frame of mind during the time that I made the trade and what was the way I evaluated it. And based on the way I evaluated it, did I make a mistake at the time? And if you don't think you made a mistake, then you didn't make a mistake. The trade just didn't work out. That's just how it works, you know? So I know it's easier said than done. Trades can be emotional when the other piece really, really pops off. But I think that's the way to do trading, in my opinion.
Well, we're going to go into some example trades, but I think first I'm going to give the last category of trade I came up with that I think is applicable in pretty much all leagues. And that's a, you know, position strength for weakness trade. So You know, for example, your team is flush with forwards, but you're really lacking on defense or goalie. Someone else has the opposite problem, and you try and identify that. I think that's maybe one of the most natural, you know, trade opportunities to look for, and you know, possibly the easiest to see just by looking at the rosters page on Yahoo, where you can easily identify where one team, you know, has a glut of one position and a shortage of another.
Yeah. I think it's a little, with two util slots in the Kickupful, things are a little more flexible, but I think in general for most leagues, that should be, going back to put yourself in their shoes, that should be like one of the first things you look at, not necessarily to like fill. I mean, that's one way to facilitate a trade, is like fill a weakness that they have. But just in general, you can stop a trade like idea from even happening just to look. Like if I trade him a center for his right wing, he has like five centers. Like the trade's never happening because he's never going to do it. Even if you give him value for the center, that can be the frustrating thing for trades. Is like, man, even though this guy's better, I would easily trade him for this other guy, but it's just not going to happen based on the positions. They just can't afford to have another center, or sometimes they can't afford to have another right wing. So you can kind of get by it a little bit because some people don't mind having the extra center, or they're okay with being a little weaker on a certain wing. They can get by it, especially in the Kickupful with util slots. But you really got to hone in on what is an acceptable level of position that they have and try to have a trade based around that, loosely at least, because no matter how much you push, if it doesn't make sense to the roster, it's not going to go anywhere right off the bat.
Do you find that, you know, you're usually, you know, dealing from a position of strength on a particular roster slot? Like, are you usually trying to sell forwards, or are you trying to, you know, where do you find your strength normally is in Kickupful anyway?
Well, it's like I said, a lot of free agents. I'm big on just like flipping free agents for anything I possibly can. I'm blowing up my spot a little bit, but it's not like people don't know this. But flipping free agents for any value I possibly could give to slightly upgrade anyone is like one of my big strengths, I think. But I do draft like most people. It's not a surprise. Like, try to wait on centers, try to not have lots of draft capital into centers, because trading specifically it's much easier to trade the wingers throughout the season. There's a lot of cases where you have center who's popping off. Like, I've had this happen so many times, even when I try not to draft centers. You have the center that's absolutely popping off and you really want to consolidate value with a trade, but people just can't, you can't do a center for a winger. It just won't happen. So it just makes your life a big headache. And then another thing I'll say is, if you really want to have trades in mind, this only really applies to the auction draft, but especially this year, I went out of my way to have, I say that with, even though I did less trades this year, to have a lot of maybe mid-level guys to lower-level guys, because if you have a studs and duds type roster, especially in an auction league, it's a lot harder to facilitate trades because duds are way harder to sell someone. But if you have a lot of mid to low level guys, you can make like 2-for-1, 3-for-2s that make a little bit more sense, because you have a lot more options to offer someone versus saying like, I have McDavid, Rantanen, whatever, like your high end guys. Like, those trades are extremely hard to facilitate, especially in the Kickupful. So I think if you want to be a trader, trying to have a bunch of players that are kind of in the mix is a good way to go.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, we have a pretty cool feature on the Keeping Carlson Discord where trades that are made in any division end up, after the counteroffer period is done, getting posted to a channel where people can see who was traded for who and also vote on which side they think won the trade, or if they think the trade was even. So, you know, this provides a lot of entertainment throughout the season for people in other divisions to see, you know, and also, you know, get trade ideas themselves. So I had a couple of these that I wanted to mention that I thought were notable for one reason or another. The most voted on trade that we had in the whole season, right at the beginning of the year, and the only one that has more than two players on each side, because I think it's hard to evaluate, you know, on the fly here on the show, trades with more than, you know, 2-for-2 or 1-for-2 or 1-for-1. But this one here was a 3-for-3 trade in October 15th. where one side traded away Elias Pettersson, Elias Lindholm, and Jacob Markstrom for Connor McDavid, Andrei Svechnikov, and Ville Husso. And this trade got 140 votes, with 110 of them for the Connor McDavid side winning. And I think in retrospect, we can probably both agree that was correct. Pettersson has not had a great season. Lindholm has not had a great season. Markstrom's been injured. But I wonder, you know, can you take us back to this time and make any argument in favor of the Pettersson side based on what we knew back in October?
I think it's I'm not trying to put anyone down because, like I said, I want more people to trade, not less. But I think in the case of this trade specifically, I think there wasn't any point where the McDavid side wasn't going to be a slam dunk just based on draft position of each of the players, based on trying to remember October 15th, what was happening. But I can't imagine it's anywhere like the jump between Pettersson and McDavid's absolutely massive. And then Svechnikov, Lindholm, I would argue is pretty like decently large, even at the time when we didn't know exactly what you had in Lindholm. And then you're getting an upgrade on Husso. Like it's pretty clearly in favor of one side. So instead of trying to argue for the other side, cause I don't know if I can, I'll just say, if you're in a situation like this, say you really want to trade McDavid for whatever reason, it's fine. You're allowed to do whatever you want with your roster, you know? I would try to maybe maximize trading him away then. I'm sure maybe there were counteroffers. I'm not sure exactly what happened with this trade, but would have this trade happened if you did McDavid and Husso for Pettersson and Markstrom and you left out Svechnikov, Lindholm? I think it probably still happened. So at least that would have been some value you could have retained, or you could have shopped McDavid around to other teams kind of deal. So I think in cases like this, even if you're not 100% certain on the values for players, I think when you have a big name like McDavid, you should at least try to see what you can get, go around, see what the maximum value you can get. Even if the maximum value isn't equal to McDavid, I think you can get something better than, say, this trade got you in the end.
Yeah, I think shopping around is something that people often don't do. You know, maybe you're the person, you know, in your league in tier one who's sending out offers to everybody, who's actively like, you know, shopping their own players and investigating what people are willing to sell their players for. But sometimes the people who get an offer, you know, they're just like, maybe I like that. Maybe I'll click accept. You know, they don't,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, they don't think about who, you know, else they could try to offer that player for, and, you know, maybe don't see a counter offer within the time period. You know, it's a 24-hour period to accept a counter offer. And if you, you know, accept your original trade late one night, work all the next day, you might not even have time to consider any counter offers until, you know, only a couple hours before that deadline comes in. So the only other explanation I can think of is if the side trading away McDavid just really wanted the Swedes in Pettersson, Lindholm, and Markstrom. That's the only scenario that jumps out to me. But let's move on to another trade here. And I'm going to go with the one that foreshadowed a real-life trade by, I guess, a couple months. Because back on November 15th, we had one team trade away their Mikko Rantanen in exchange for Anze Kopitar and Martin Natchez. So we actually had the Natchez for Rantanen trade in Kekupfel back in November. So this is a 2-for-1 deal.
A true 2-for-1, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Rantanen's clearly the best player on the one side. The other side gets a really overperforming Natchez in, you know, in the peak of his hot streak in mid November. Along with a maybe dependable, you could say, Kopitar. What do we think about this one? At the time, it was voted very heavily in favor of Rantanen.
Yeah, I think at the time, it's, in my opinion, a slam dunk for whoever got Rantanen. This is like the kind of dream trade. Like right now, maybe the person with the Natchez is a little much happier. But like at the time, like I said, you're trying to evaluate trades based on the decision-making process at the time. And this is the kind of trade you kind of dream of because Nathan's blazing hot, but he was streaky lots of last year, so you never really know what you're getting. And then Kopitar's kind of similar thing. He's been really good this year, but like a lot of people had him pegged to be not as good this year, so you're kind of always a little iffy. And you're consolidating those two hot players into, like, I love Rantanen. I drafted him. I targeted him specifically this year, contract year. I'm a big Rantanen fan. So this is the kind of deal you dream of, in my opinion, when you're looking for a trade. Well, with all that being said, though, I agree with all the votes at the time. Like, it's massively in the favor of Rantanen. But once again, depending on the standings, like, if you're really, really slipping in the standings, you're worried about it, you can't really seem to make a move, you can't really seem to find the right free agents, and you're just losing week after week after week. Sometimes to get yourself back in the mix, you have to make big swings like this. So if you really believe Natchez is going to be the guy and Kopitar is going to keep it up, then maybe you make a trade like this. Like I said, maybe I'd try to shop around to get a little more value, but sometimes the value is just not there. So I can't necessarily fault the person depending on what their position was. If they're believers in Natchez and they need a 2-for-1 to mix things up, then I totally understand it.
Yeah, it's definitely a rarity in the looking back through the log of all the trades we had in Kickupful this year to find that 2-for-1 deal that, you know, it wasn't totally even, but you can understand it, like you said. You know, you can understand the argument for it. Now, here's a trade that was pretty evenly voted. On December 4th, we had a team trade away their Timo Meier for Igor Shesterkin. 1-for-1, forward for goalie. We had 11 people vote that the Meier side won the trade. 16 voted that Shesterkin won. And 26 voted for even. So, you know, oftentimes the votes end up getting pretty one-sided. You know, a couple people early on after the trade is posted vote for one side. And, you know, sometimes there might be people who, you know, just coalesce around, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I agree with, you know, the people who've already said one side won. But this was a case where there really was a pretty even split on the vote. So I think it's interesting to consider in the, you know, two totally different positions to get such an even trade.
Yeah. I'll just quickly highlight. I do think since we're talking about a couple of trades and specifically the trade channel, I think some people are apprehensive to do trades maybe a little bit because you do a trade in the Kickupful, it's in the trade channel for everyone to see, everyone to judge, everyone to click which side won. And that can be a little intimidating. I get it. But I think you shouldn't try to worry about that too much. A lot of the trades I've done in the Kickupful where I really, really like the trade, some of them were voted very negatively in my favor, and they turned out to be pretty good. So I think you should do your best to not try to beat yourself up too much if people don't agree with you. As long as the decision-making process you made at the time makes you feel good, then that's all that really matters. And then back to the trade here, it seems pretty good to me. I think December 4th, I'm trying to remember when the Rangers were falling apart, I also personally traded away Shesterkin. I don't know when my trade was. Somewhere around there, too. I wasn't loving where the Rangers were going, so I wanted to consolidate value in Shesterkin that I could. And I don't think Timo Meier's that bad of a... Like, it's also the hindsight. Like, I know Meier's been off power play, too, and he's had stretches where we're not sure really what we're getting from him, not his usual numbers. But he's still usually shooting a decent amount, like... I think it's a pretty even trade, especially for at the time. Like I said, the Rangers were massive question mark in the December region. So, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think both sides are definitely question marks, you know, at the time and arguably still, you know, could be really valuable, but also could not. And I think my question here is, like, how do you assess relative value between a skater and a goalie? You know, are you looking at just straight, you know, Kickupful points over time, you know, because goalies are not really just looking at on an average per game basis. You're looking at on a, you know, in a month, you know, how many games are they getting? How many total points are they getting? That kind of thing. So how do you compare a goalie and a forward for a trade?
It's hard, specifically just for goalies, because for anyone who knows me for fantasy hockey, I despise goalies. I hate it. I hate them with all my guts. I'm not always 0G, but like it's my least favorite part of fantasy hockey. So it's just so hard to value. Even mid-season, it's even more difficult just because, like, you have a top-tier goalie like Shesterkin, and he's doing so bad for so long. The team's crumbling. Like, is he even worth anything? Because the way goalies are, if they're not doing well, they're free agent almost. So it's very difficult to value goalies, especially good goalies, mid-season like this. So the best I can do is, like, just go, for me anyway, especially if it's an elite goalie or sub-elite, you know, the first tier two, tier one, tier two, tier three in the rankings, like those tiers, try to, like, evaluate a goalie based off, this was his starting, this is the way I do it anyway. This is where he started at the start of the year, and then through progressing, how bad has he actually been throughout the rest of the year? And when I traded away Shesterkin, like, in my mind, I was like, this guy could literally be worth, this is going to sound crazy because I'm talking about one of the best goalies in the league, but this guy could technically go into a 1A, 1B with Quick if the Rangers are this bad, and then you literally have no value from a goalie that you drafted in whatever round. So I tried to get whatever value I could, and I think a trade like this kind of highlights that. It's hard to evaluate it, but I think getting any value for a really cold goalie is, in my opinion, a good decision, but it really depends on the situation, I guess.
It's interesting. Like, they're both risky players, but Meyer is probably never going to have no value in Kakupfel.
Yeah, he'll have some value at least, you know? Yeah.
Meanwhile, Shesterkin, like you said, you know, things could go really, really bad. He could have no value in Kakupfel or close to it, but he could also at the same time become a Hellebuck level value. You know, like the spectrum is so much wider on goalies, I think, in terms of, you know, you might think they're probably going to be worth about this, but they could be way more valuable or way less valuable. There's just so much more variance, I think, as compared to skaters.
Unfortunately, yeah. That's why I know that, that's like, I try to say like why it's just, that's why I just, it, you know, goalies just don't even get me started on goalies.
I think they frustrate a lot of us. I feel the same way. I got one more trade to ask you about. Sure. And this is, I think, a pretty classic example of a buy low, sell high, or buy high, sell low, depending on your perspective on it. This was in late January. We had a trade, one for one, of Adam Fantilli for Matt Barzal. And Fantilli was, up until, you know, sometime, you know, pretty commonly found in free agency in the Kakupfel. He'd had a really slow start to the year. But after the injuries that were hitting Columbus's top line, he kind of swooped in and got some great deployment and started popping off, and a lot of people added him. And this trade, I think, happened just kind of after that happened. And we had, you know, him being traded for a cold, injured Barzal, and the voting in the trade channel was pretty handily on the Barzal side winning. I wonder what you think about this one.
Yeah, so I looked this up specifically on January 25th when this trade went through. I think Barzal was still healthy. This is after his first injury and before the major one where he was gone forever. Or I don't know. I don't even know the update for. I think he's out for the season or close to it. Indefinite anyway. So at the time, he was healthy. And I honestly agree with the votes. Based on that time, obviously, he got injured after. Mainly, well, Fantilli's deployment was based off of injuries. Like, there was just substantial injuries, of course, but especially, like, Monahan is supposed to be back before, I think he's supposed to be back second week of the playoffs, or a couple of playoffs, somewhere in that region. So, very injury-based deployment for him, too. So, I don't even necessarily think you're trading for a solid piece back for, like, a cold Barzal. So, like, this is the kind of trade I would love to make. I picked up Fantilli in the free agency. He pops off, and then I get Barzal for him. This is the exact kind of trade I would love to make. But I like playing devil's advocate because it's nice to not totally bash on one end of a trade. If someone really believes in Fantilli and he thinks he's going to take this opportunity, and regardless of injuries, this is his time, and he's going to pop off, and Barzal's been cold and the Islanders have been a mess, then sometimes you just got to get your guy. I like thinking that taking big swings in fantasy, it's not only is it fun, sometimes you need to make things happen. So I don't necessarily fault them either.
Yeah, I think this one's interesting. You know, it's late in the season, so you can argue that, you know, value has really changed a lot. But back at the time of the draft, Adam Fantilli was, his average draft positioning at Cutful was around 170th. And meanwhile, Barzal was up around 55th. So, you know, totally different class of player back in the fall when these people were drafted. And then even after Fantilli was drafted around 170th, he was dropped in most leagues. So
yeah, just to butt in real quick, he was a free agent in tier one for most of the year.
And tier one being 16
teams.
Yeah, even
the
deeper.
16 teams. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, that's a, yeah, it's hard. It's hard maybe to fully evaluate that one without the injury context. It would have been nice to see another couple weeks of Barzal playing to evaluate it. But I tend to agree with what you were saying. That's a dream trade to make, to get Barzal or a player like Barzal in that moment after, you know, you're flipping a hot free agent and consolidating the value, as you said, in a player who's got maybe a longer, I don't know, reputation is not the right word, but more pedigree in a fantasy hockey sense, if that makes sense.
He had, like, Barzal had some really, really good stats last year. Obviously, it's not a for sure thing with him, especially with the new coach this year, but I still was a believer. So this kind of trade, like I said, it would be a dream trade for me if I was in that position too. It didn't, like, this is another good example of, like, you did this trade and then Barzal got injured and now he's injured for maybe the rest of the fantasy season. You can't beat yourself up because he's injured and you don't have him now. And even if Fantilli pops off for the rest of the year, you still, in my opinion, made the right decision at the time. And if you keep making those decisions in the future, you're going to benefit from it. So,
yeah, you know, it just could, it could have been just as easily Fantilli getting injured there. You know, you couldn't know at the time.
No.
So that's the examples that I'd highlighted. And I was wondering if you had anything else you wanted to highlight in terms of either a particular trade you've done or some advice we haven't, you know, touched on yet.
Yeah. So, I'll do one more quick thing. I want to highlight once again, before I do the last quick thing, is like fantasy hockey, especially Kakupo, is supposed to be fun. It's not always easy to say that, but it's supposed to be fun. So if you want to do a trade, I've said all these things on why, how to maximize your value in trades, but if you want to do a trade and it makes sense and is not super lopsided just to have a fun factor in the trade, that's perfectly fine. Like, that's the point of having fantasy hockey, is you're enjoying it. So make a trade, and if it's not good for you, but you like the players on your roster after, and you enjoy watching your roster, you enjoy watching the games after you do the trade, then that's a perfectly good reason to trade, in my opinion. Things are supposed to be fun anyway. So I just wanted to highlight on that. And then my last little thing I'll say is, when initiating trades, just try to be as kind as you can. Like I said, a lot of people have different personalities, different ways to approach trading, different ways to approach fantasy hockey. So you want to just be like, you want to notice those tells and then try to know when to pump the brakes or not pump the brakes. And then one of my, like, specifically, this is the thing that happens a lot, I think, in trading that I would say you really should not do. Maybe a big, like, red sign, please don't do this when you do trades, is if you send someone a trade and they reject it, or you send them a proposal on Discord and you have a message and they reject the trade, don't come back saying, like, I know you rejected the trade, but this is why you should do the trade. Because that has almost never worked for me. I don't do it at all. But, like, that kind of, like, logic to me was never really works, because the person in their mind rejected it for a reason. You trying to be like, no, but I'm smarter than you, so this is why you should do the trade, that just never really works out. At best, you could be like, hey, I saw you rejected my trade. Do you have any interest in these kind of players? You always kind of want to just be as open as you can, be as kind as you can. And just the other, you know, it can be frustrating at times. I know I've been frustrated and have to, like, push the frustration down and then just be as kind as I can, because maybe there's a trade in the future. If you blow up that bridge today, there's no possibility for a trade then, like, within the next few weeks. So you might as well be as kind as you can. And in general, you know, that's just a good thing to do as a human. So,
yeah, there's going to be some people who just maybe won't be receptive to any trade offer, and you might have to, you know, move on to looking only at other teams. But, you know, at the same time, someone might reject that specific offer, but still be interested in trading in general. So always good to try and chat with them if you can, get a sense of their mindset, what they're looking for. The Discord platform really helps for Kakupful. If you're, you know, working on trades in your home leagues, presumably you'll have other ways to message the other managers there.
Yeah, just one quick tip on that, because it's come up for me, is when you send someone a message on Discord for the first time, it like it has a weird way of like highlighting it where it's like in message requests, I think, and it doesn't necessarily pop up in your main feed. So you might not see it. So just make sure if you're acting like a couple to check that every now and then. Because I know sometimes whenever I'm in tier one and there's new managers that I haven't talked to before, I'll send a Discord message to them and they won't respond for a few days. And they'll be like, oh, I didn't even see you sent me this message because it's not in the like regular area, which is totally understandable. So just keep that in mind.
You know, potentially you'll tip your hand, but you can always, I guess, tag the person in the division chat, the specific room, you know, for the other managers in your division. So that might highlight them in a different way, maybe could get their attention. I think if I hear that someone else is, you know, proposing trades, I'm obviously going to be curious. So maybe that's a way that you can get even more potential trades to get discussed.
Yeah, for sure. That's like, for me, it's always like anyone can send me a trade anytime. And if you send me a trade, there's at least 50% chance that I'll at least counter it. So that's kind of how my outlook's always been. And people know that, but it can't literally just can't hurt to be like, hey guys, I'm always open to trades. Feel free to send me anytime. I might reject it, but I'm always open. I almost forgot the most important tip ever. Any trade you receive technically is a good thing because you can just reject it and then nothing bad happened, but you have the opportunity to accept it. And based on having that opportunity, it's always a good thing. Even if they send you the worst trade you've ever seen and it wrecks your day, because how could they possibly send me this trade? This person thinks so less of me. Like, how is this even possible? It's still a benefit to you because you can just reject it. Trade offers are always technically a good thing. I guess the only time they're not is if someone spams you with trades over and over and over again. But most decent human beings won't do that. And if they did, we have ways in the Kakupful to stop that. So that would be my tip. It's never worth it to be insulted by a trade. You can just reject it. It always opens more avenues than it closes them. So,
well, that's a great point to end off on. I think, Jordan, thank you very much. It's been a great time talking with you about these trades. I see when I look at the tier one standings, you are currently in a playoff position. Hopefully you can hold it through the last few matchups, and
barring a horrific turn of events, I should be good for the playoffs. It's still technically possible to miss, but it would take a lot of bad things happening.
Well, if you do, I wish you the best in the playoffs, and hopefully you can bring home that championship. If not, at least we'll probably see you around in tier one again for yet another season next year.
5 straight years, assuming things don't go terribly. Like I said, I'm trying to win, but it's really hard. So if my legacy is staying in tier one for 6, 7, whatever, I'll try to push as far as I can. Then that is what it is. I'm happy with that. Obviously I'll still try to win, but it's hard.
Well, I hope in addition to winning, you can also get some good trades in before the Kakupful trade deadline, which we absolutely should mention before we end the show here. And I had just pulled it up. It is February 26th. So less than 2 weeks from today. It's midweek right after the Four Nations break. So there will be a couple weekend games next weekend around they're on the 22nd and 23rd, I think, or maybe it's the 21st and 22nd. I'd have to double check right now. But after those back-to-backs, you have a couple more days before the deadline on February 26th. So make sure you get your trades in before then, if you want to make any, you know, big splashes before the playoffs.
Yeah, I think now is a great time to do it. I know people are watching the Four Nations, but there's a big void of hockey right now. So people might have their minds a little more open to having a trade sent to them. You never know. Now's the time, you know, trade deadline coming up. You could really change your fortune if you make the right trade. So
also, you know, circling back to one of the things that we said near the beginning, you know, we talked about the importance of considering those previous 2, 3, 4 games that show up in the game log. especially when that game is the prior day or 2 days before, you know, that really feels, you know, so close and so important in judging the value of a player. But as we get near the end of this Four Nations break, those previous NHL games are going to feel so far away. So you might have people more in a mood to consider long-term value as opposed to just, you know, what happened in the previous couple games.
Yeah. I think it's just an opportunity, right? Especially with the trade deadline with so much time. Now's the time to do it. Although the Four Nations games have been exciting, they've met my expectations and so much more. So maybe people will be way too invested in them and they won't listen to your offers. Who knows? It's worth a shot.
Well, we'll enjoy watching the rest of the Four Nations. Everyone in Tier 1, send trade offers to Jordan. Jordan, thank you
very
much.
Please do. I beg you. Please send them. I might counter. Who knows what could happen.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we will see you at some point in the future whenever we do the next one of these shows. But get your trades in and enjoy the rest of your Cupful seasons or whatever leagues you're playing in.
Thanks so much for having me.